History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories there that should not go untold. And really, they don't have to go untold if we'll just take a little time to ask a few questions and, more importantly, be patient enough to listen. We'll be amazed by some of the things that come back our way from some of our more experienced neighbors. And when you're 99 years old, you're pretty experienced. We're going to learn that today. But we're here to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, yeah, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often we are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. I'm in one of my favorite places today in downtown Fresno, California, the Veterans Memorial Museum, home of the Legion of Valor, which had been closed for about a year because of the pandemic, but is back open now every day except Sunday from 10 to 3. And if you come here on a Tuesday, you are sure to find 99-year-old Bill Biggers, one of the volunteer docents here at the museum. Let's start there, Bill, before I ask you about your childhood and take you way back. How long have you been volunteering here now at the Veterans Memorial Museum?
About 10 years.
What was it that made you want to do that?
Well, I was busy with so many other volunteer places, like the Fresno Police Officers Association. I remember that for many years. And I just had too much going to get down here. But once Mike Harris got over here, I decided I better be here.
You got roped in. I love it. And you mentioned the Police Officers Association. Do you know, are you the oldest living Fresno Police Department alum?
Yes, I am.
And you're going to hit the century mark in a few months.
November.
It's coming. All right. Well, I'm sure we'll talk more about this museum and why it's so special to you, but let's go way back. You were born in Oklahoma, right?
Yes.
With a whole lot of sisters.
Well, just one sister when I was. I just had one. The others come later.
And you probably don't even remember anything about Oklahoma. You were so young when you left there.
Yeah, I left there on my birthday. I was 2 years old. But I have a lot of relatives at the time back there, so I got back about every 2 years and visited. My grandparents lived there.
And what was it that brought your family out to California from Oklahoma?
Well, my dad came out here. His father passed away when my dad was 14. He played with an Oklahoma Indian team, the only white man on it, and they traveled around Oklahoma playing different states for 2 years. And then he came here to Fresno, to Kearney Park, went to work for Kearney Park. And he worked there for about 2 years, and then the war came on. Now, while he was here, he played ball with an Italian team. And then he went to the service in World War I. And afterwards, he went back to his hometown in Oklahoma and married my mother. And they came back out here to the same station, and he lived in a little house right by the front gate called the Gatehouse. And that was part of his duty to lock up the park and reopen it in the morning.
And you mentioned there that in addition to being a ball player, your father served in World War I.
Yes.
What do you know about what he did in World War I?
Not much. He didn't talk about it.
He was in the Army?
Yes, the Army. I know he worked as an aide to the nurses when they had the big flu epidemic and so many people died.
Yeah, over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, it's been almost 100 years since you were born. So your father has been out here to California, experienced a taste of life, but he's back in his native Oklahoma. That's where you're born. And when you're 2 years old, the family comes out here. What do you remember about your childhood in California? What was it like back then?
Not much, because we didn't stay out here too long, and we went back to Oklahoma. My dad took over farming the property owned by my mother's father. Then they came back out here, and we never went back.
So then you're here in California.
My mother had always raised a bunch of chickens. She usually had 300 or 400. I had to milk 2 cows, and I had saddle horses. So my job was also doing that and feeding and gathering those eggs. But she would give them, we always had extra butter, and she'd give them eggs and stuff to eat. And a lot of them, we had a big packing shed in the back where they slept with two fumigating houses that they couldn't close the door on, but they could They could leave them slightly open and be out of the weather. And they also had electricity down there, so they had lights. So a lot of people from Oklahoma, well, I say Oklahoma because they called them Okies.
Sure.
It didn't make any difference which state they came from. They were called Okies. But anyway, we had a lot of them that come there and stayed and would sleep in those houses, especially if they stayed. Some of them would stay year-round until they got enough money to bring their family out. But it was a sad deal to see so many people out of work.
Well, I'm just guessing. You probably had a fair amount of Japanese-American classmates.
A lot of them. I had run around with twin boys, Yo and Sho. Yes, we had that, and their sister was in my class. So, yes, I had a lot of nice Japanese friends.
I had Sho on this program probably over a decade ago.
Is that right?
Sho Katayama, yeah.
Right.
And if I'm not mistaken, he and his twin both served in the 442nd Regimental Combat Team.
Correct.
Well, and we're getting ahead of ourselves. So the reason I ask you that question, obviously, is even though you graduate in 1939, a couple years later, December 7th, 1941, do you remember where you were and how you found out about that?
I was back on the ranch as a mechanic, tractor driver, truck driver, whatever you want to call it, because I had married in 1940.
Well, I guess I better hit that first if we want to stay chronologically. So you graduate high school in 1939, you get married in 1940. That's pretty quick.
That's pretty quick, yeah. I was working for the Southern Pacific in Los Angeles. I got married.
How'd you meet your wife?
We went to school together. I was a senior and she was a freshman.
Robbing the cradle.
No, we was only 1 year apart. I started early, and then I skipped a grade in high school. I never was a junior. I went from a sophomore to a senior.
Well, and I know that you ended up enjoying 70 years of marriage, so I should probably hear about why your wife was so special, why it was so important to you that you got married at such a young age.
Well, of course, we went to school together at least for 1 year. As I say, I was working down to Los Angeles, and it made commute very, very difficult, you know, especially when you just had a little Model A coupe. So anyway, we decided to get married. We had dated for a couple of years, and we decided to get married. Moved to Los Angeles with me, and we stayed down there for a while till I finished up with the machinist, and then I came back to the ranch, where again, we were furnished everything, home and everything else to go with it. In fact, we had a nice home.
This is out in Orange Cove?
Out in the country on the ranch.
So that's where you were on December 7th, 1941.
That's correct, because so many of the men were going into the service, and we were running short, so we brought in Beceros. That was a very good program, very good program. Dad would tell me I need 15 men today, and I could throw boxes in the old truck and put sideboards on and throw some boxes in there for them to set on and go down to the camp and get the 15 men and let them know we was going to use them maybe for a week, 2 weeks, whatever we thought we needed them. And if it was a good crew, we want the same crew every time, you know. They would give us their box lunches, and at lunch they'd have an hour off to rest and have their lunch, and then at 5 o'clock we took them back to the camp. That was an excellent program, excellent.
So you mentioned in high school you're running around with Yo and Sho, and you knew their sister, and there are other Japanese-American families in the area.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you saw what happened to them after Pearl Harbor.
Yes, yes, that was sad. In fact, our neighbors was a Japanese family. The man had got injured, and he tried to commit suicide, and he didn't fake. That got him into the doctor and got him taken care of, and then he had a wreck. He was in the hills, and I think it was deliberate. But she was very good. We had a plum orchard across the street from him. She'd gather that wood up for fire. And when I had to take her to the train, when they shipped them out, she had three children, and take her to the train, and they wouldn't let her keep a butcher knife. So I still got that butcher knife.
What happened to their property, their home, all of that?
Well, they didn't have any property. They were workers. That particular family didn't have any workers, you know. But like you and Sho, their property was really taken good care of most of the people kept the property up. I know Yo and Sho. It was just like when they left us, you know, very good.
So someone stepped in and maintained it for them so it would be there when they got back.
Another Japanese guy that I like real well was Bill Sheba. he was in my class, and far as I know, his property was well maintained while he was gone too.
Was it something that emotionally, intellectually, you had to wrestle with at the time, that here these classmates of yours who were born in America just like you were being treated so much differently?
Well, yes, it was. We only had one incident that I know of in Dinuba, and that was a family there. Well, the husband had a radio contact with Japan, and the big planes was flying around, and they finally located it, put him in jail, and he committed suicide. Yeah, but most of the families that I knew, they were all just good people.
Did you ever find out what happened to the family you had to take to the train station?
No, I know the girl. I don't know what happened to the boy. They had two girls. One was young. Boy was in the middle. The girl stayed back east someplace and went to work there. I never saw him after that.
All right. So, you know, the war effort is underway. A lot of guys your age are going, and I'm sure you have access to exemptions, right, for being agriculturally necessary?
Yeah, I had exemptions there. So I didn't go in right away.
You're also newly married, too.
Yeah, I was newly married, yeah.
So is that something that weighed on you over time?
Yes, it did. It weighed on me. I always felt I should go as like everybody else, you know. But
were you hearing stories about some of your classmates and what they were doing?
Oh, yeah. Most of my classmates went to Germany. A couple of them were pilots, and we got shot down. And I didn't hear much about the ones that went to the Pacific.
Were there any guys from your class who were killed over there?
Yes. Yes, several of them. One real good friend of mine, he was killed in Italy.
But so you're keeping the ranch going, doing this work, and the newspaper's telling you so-and-so is here and this is what happened to him.
Oh, yeah.
So what changed for you? How did you eventually end up in the Army?
Of course, I could see the draft coming, you know, sooner or later it's coming, you know. And believe it or not, I enlisted in the Navy. And I went up to Camp Beale. That's where they were being inducted at the time. They found a murmur in my heart. They kept me there 3 days, and I was working giving shots to the guys that was going in. And so 3 days later, why, they sent me to San Francisco. And you know the Navy man, what he done to me? He stepped right across that where it said limited duty Navy. He stepped general duty Army. I said, I enlisted in the Navy. He said, we're not taking anybody to the Navy today. So I ended up in the Army. Thank God.
That probably wasn't your attitude at the time, though.
No, it wasn't my attitude that, but one trip over, it changed.
Uh-huh. How did your wife feel about all of that? How'd you handle it with her?
It was okay with her because our son was born, and he was just a baby when I shipped out.
So you're shipping out, and you're leaving behind a wife and a newborn son.
Yes.
That couldn't have been easy.
It wasn't very easy, no. But she understood. She's a good Christian, and she understood the necessity that we had to win this war.
Was there a question in your mind as to whether you'd make it back to see them again?
I didn't give it any thought, tell you the truth about it. I just knew I'd make it back.
The fact that we're talking to him is evidence of that, but that does not mean he didn't experience close calls overseas. We'll hear about one of those and some very moving moments he experienced in Japan when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.